Welcome to week 26 of our series, The Blessed Life, a study of the Sermon on the Mount. Keep watching as we discuss one of the best known of all Jesus' teachings, the Golden Rule. And we look at not only what it means, but how to actually live it out.
Now again, we mentioned we're just going to be looking at one verse, but it's a great verse. It's a verse that many people have referred to, and it's commonly referred to as the Golden Rule. You know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Now, I think if we were to just even go out in a street in Akron and we were to ask people about the Golden Rule, a lot of people would think they know it. You know, a lot of people say, oh, yeah, I kind of know that. And I think many of them would even get it at least partially right. A lot would get it right. Some would get it partially right. The hard part is when you get it partially right, that means that you also get partially wrong, which can change the meaning. And so I think that some people, if they're asked, you know, what's the Golden Rule? A lot of people would say something more along the lines, well, it says, you know, do unto others as they do unto you, which is a whole world of a different meaning. But it's a very high standard, you know, to do unto others as you would have them do unto you. But the hard part is that somebody treats us wrongly, and we want to go back to, well, let me treat them as they treated me. Or think about even a child. And a child was asked once, you know, can you say the Golden Rule? And their response was, do unto others before they do unto you. And, you know, some of us would like that as the Golden Rule. And well, I think about even growing up, in my home, my dad had another version of the Golden Rule. I mean, what would happen is that we would go and we'd ask him for something, and he'd say no, and then we'd usually, you know, get together our siblings, and we would all come to the dinner table as a united front. We'd try to argue our point, and he would listen, and then often his response was, well, you don't understand. Our family is governed by the Golden Rule. And as you know what the Golden Rule is? The one who has the gold makes the rules. Now, when my kids were young, I started doing that with them and teaching them about that, you know, joking about the Golden Rule. And then I realized they're going to go to Sunday school and somebody's going to ask them the Golden Rule. And they're going to say, well, my dad says it's the person who has the gold makes the rules. And then I'm thinking, oh, man, we're going to have articles in the newsletter and it's going to be a mess. And even as we shared last week, sometimes when you're the pastor and you have young kids, that kind of limits how you can joke with your kids because you never know what's going to come back around. Now, even though we don't always get it right, the fact is that there are many people that look at the Golden Rule and they see it as an incredible statement of morality. In fact, there are many non-Christians who will often quote the Golden Rule, they will talk about it, and they will refer to it as the greatest statement of moral teaching ever made. There are many people who don't believe in Jesus as being God, but they will say, well, he's a great teacher, and the Golden Rule will be the first statement they go to point out what a great teacher he was. And so what does it mean? You know, we've got to say, what does it mean? Do we understand its meaning? And then how do we learn to live it out? Well, what is the principle of the Golden Rule? What is it actually teaching us? See, while many people claim that we'll look at the Golden Rule and say it's the climax of Jesus' moral teaching, what a lot of other people will look at is they'll point out the fact that, well, no, there were other people that taught something similar to the Golden Rule way before Jesus. You know, sometimes thousands or hundreds of years before him. And so, for example, in Jewish teaching, there was a guy named Rabbi Hillel, and he said this was his version, whatever angers you when you suffer it at the hands of others, do not do it to others. Or even Confucius, again, very well-known moral teacher, he had likewise a version that he taught. He said, do nothing to your neighbor which afterwards you would not have your neighbor do to you. And likewise, there are other religious traditions that even since Jesus have likewise had similar statements. So for example, you have Buddhism. They likewise have a similar version. It's treat not others in ways that you yourself would find hurtful. Or Hinduism likewise has a similar statement. Do not do to others what would cause pain if done to you. Now we look at this and we say, okay, well, those sound, you know, very similar. In fact, some people would say, well, Jesus as a moral teacher wasn't really teaching anything new. Some of his moral teaching, they would use this as an example of, well, he listened to someone else and he kind of just repackaged it, but it really wasn't anything new. But what I want you to realize is that while these are similar, there's actually a huge difference between what Jesus taught and what all these other people taught in their version of the Golden Rule. Look at all these, and then let's look at what Jesus taught. Whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them. I want you to think about it for a minute. You see the difference. See, the difference is between Jesus and all of them is all of them stated the rule in the negative. And Jesus stated it in the positive. All of them basically stated, one version or another, don't do to others what you would want not want them to do to you. And Jesus turned that around and put it in a command in the positive, do to others what you would have them do to you. And it totally changed the meaning. In fact, when you look at the negative command, as much as we now try to lift it up, really when you look at that, in essence, really what it's saying is it's saying, you know, a little more than, well, don't kill because you wouldn't want someone to kill you. Don't steal for someone because you wouldn't want them to do that. You know, don't take their wife because you wouldn't want them to do that. In fact, it could be interpreted, if you don't like your neighbor, then just leave them alone. Don't do anything bad to them, but you could ignore them. You could just totally ignore them. But here Jesus turns that around and he takes a positive side, do to others. It's not don't do something that would be hurtful, but no, we actually have to pay attention to them. We have to build a relationship. We have to initiate doing something positive. Do the good thing to others that you wish that they would do unto you. That's way more demanding. You see, it's relatively easy to say, okay, what are the evil things, the bad things that I'm not supposed to do, and to avoid doing that. Boy, it's a whole lot harder to realize that God has called us to not only not do bad, but actually do good. Now, to help you even understand more of this, let me take a moment, and what I want you to see is that it's not even just here, but when you look at all of Jesus' teaching, all of the New Testament morality, really, it's one of the things that distinguishes it is that it always puts things in the positive. The distinguishing mark of Christianity is the emphasis on its moral teaching in a positive sense. And there's a huge difference when we look at these things. You see, I think, unfortunately, when a lot of people think about moral teaching, what does the Bible teach about issues of morality? They would immediately start putting rules out in the negative, the things, sins that we're supposed to avoid. You know, don't do this, don't do this. And Ten Commandments are, and on the whole, you know, more negative commandments. You know, don't kill, don't lie, don't steal. And we think of these things. And or sometimes, you know, you get a more legalistic environment, and, well, we add that, and then we add some other things. You know, I remember, you know, I went to a more legalistic Christian college for a couple of years, and they always joked the rules were, you know, don't smoke, drink, or chew, or go with girls that do. And, you know, we had these rules that we were kind of adding that we were saying, okay, here's what a good Christian does. The thing is, though, when we realize this, is that when we focus on this, it's about behavior. And it's behavior that we try to fix, and usually we try to fix it by trying harder and by more self-discipline. And when we look at the positive teaching of positive morality, it's not dealing primarily with behavior, it's dealing with character. Of not only what we do, but who we are. And the fact is, the more that I've grown to understand myself and my own struggle with sin, the fact is what I realize is that my underlying problem isn't what I do, it's who I am, it's my character. My actions just expose my character. What I do reveals my sinfulness. Now, we don't want to admit that. What we would like to do is we'd like to focus on our behavior, on our action. Well, I did this wrong thing, and the problem is the wrong thing, and I'm really not like this, and so what I tend to do is that I tend to then look at some temptation or some external source that caused me to do this wrong thing. And so what I want to do is that I want to say, okay, well, now I need to remember that rule and I need to just try harder to avoid it. But again, the problem isn't what I do. The problem is who I am. It's not only that I did something sinful, but that I am a sinner. And that the people or the events that I blame for my sin, they didn't bring anything into me that wasn't already there. What it did is it let down my defenses so that the real me came out. Now, the thing is that if we think of this and we think the answer is, you know, the problem is the don'ts, and then the answer is a set of rules, and it's about self-discipline, it's about trying harder, it's about forming new habits. And when we look at that, what we've got to realize is that we look at this and we take what I think is really a religious approach to morality. A religious approach, which is, you know, what people often think the Bible is, and it's not. It's this religious approach of saying, here are the rules, here's the don'ts that you have to do. Well, now try harder, work a little harder, self-control. You know, a good example of that is you try to quit smoking, and we sit there and we say, well, how do I do it? Well, I just got to stop. I just got to self-discipline. And the fact of the matter is, there's something in us that still longs for that because there's an addiction. And the fact is that all of us are addicted to sin. Not one, many things. And if we try to defeat it by rules, by morality, by religion, we will always fail. And here's where Jesus says, okay, I don't want to focus on the negative rules of the negative morality of here's what not to do. What I want to do is that I want to give you real victory. Because the problem is deeper than their actions, it's our heart. And the way that we change isn't by trying to just avoid sin, but by changing our character, by becoming righteous. You see, when he calls us to live righteous lives, what he's calling us to do isn't just to change our behavior, but literally to change our character. So let's take the golden rule. I mean, it's one thing to say, okay, I'm not going to do the things that would be hurtful. Okay, well, that's discipline. That's morality. That's my effort. And I can maybe do that, but the problem is, what if I turn it around and say, well, no, God wants me to do good to those that what might wrong me. He wants me to do the things for them that I wish they would do to me. Well, see, how do I do that? That's not a matter of trying harder to say no. It's not even a matter of saying yes. You see, that will flow naturally from who I am, and it won't come out if I'm not that right kind of person. It's a character issue. Negative morality is religious, while positive morality comes from transformation. It's not about what we try to do somehow to try to, you know, to remove sin or try harder to be good. It's literally the only hope that we have is, God, I need you to change me. And see, the key to a new self, it isn't trying to change what we do, our behavior. It's asking God to change who we are. Asking him to literally say, God, take out of me the sinfulness that was there and put in me a new character that will naturally act in a way that's thoughtful to other people, that's loving, that's compassionate. Make me a new person. And when you look at the Bible, what you see repeatedly is that the Bible calls us to this different kind of morality. So Christ's followers should be distinguished not by the just, or should be distinguished primarily by the presence of righteousness, not just the absence of sin. It's that we are righteous people, that we do the right thing. In this case, that we actually love people and we do good to them, not just that we don't do bad things. Now, let me even illustrate that by taking you to a passage that illustrates it very clearly. And he takes, in Ephesians 4, Paul takes these ideas and he takes one issue after another, and he shows the difference between positive and negative morality. Look what he says, Ephesians 4, starting in 25. Therefore, having put off away falsehood, let each of you speak the truth to his neighbor, for we are members of one another. He's saying, first of all, don't lie, take off the sin, but speak truthfully. Now, the thing is that I cannot lie and I can still deceive. But if I speak truthfully, you see, I'm not going to worry about lying. But speaking truthfully is a character change. It's that I am a truthful person. It's not just what I do. Be angry and do not sin. Don't let the sun go down in your anger. Do not give the opportunity to the devil. Okay, well, first of all, the negative. You know, okay, we're going to be angry, but don't let that become a cause of sin. Okay, don't do that. That's the negative. Not only that, but really when it says don't let the sun go down in your anger, forgive the person. Resolve it. That's the positive, because if I resolve the issue, I don't have to worry about sinning out of anger. But resolving it is a character change. Continues on. Let the thief steal no longer, but rather let him labor, doing honest work with his own hands, so that he may have something to share with anyone in need. Okay, don't steal. But it's not only don't steal, well, no, now work and share. Become a generous person, because if you're working and earning an income and then you're sharing from that, you're giving out generously, you're not going to be as tempted to steal. You see, but that's a character change. It's not just a matter of behavior. Verse 29, let no corrupting talk come out of your mouths, but only such as helpful for building others up, as fits the occasion, that it may give grace to those who hear. And do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God, from whom you are sealed for the day of redemption. So let no corrupting talk, nothing that tears people down. So look, you know, take that out. Take the things that are natural for us, but it's not only don't cuss, don't cut people down, don't gossip. It's not only that, but now speak words that build each other up. Building words, edifying words. And you know what? If we're focused on building each other up, complimenting, you know, we're not going to worry, we're not going to struggle as much with the corrupting words. Because when we put on righteousness, it automatically defeats the sin. You see, but I can't just do that. It's who I have to become. Lastly, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you, along with all malice, but be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, as Christ and God forgave you. You see that? It's take these things off and put this on. And how do we do that? It's ultimately not a matter of just behavior. It's a matter of transformation. See, but as long as I focus on action and my self-control, the negative, you know, I'm going to try to beat it by saying, well, don't do that, don't do that, try harder. But I've got to realize that it's not a matter of just me trying harder to not do the bad that I don't want someone else to do to me, but it's I've got to do good that I want people to do. I've got to actually be kind, and how do I do that? That's transformation. Now, do I have a part? Do you have a part? Yes, we do. You see, but our part isn't trying harder. Our part is admitting that we can't do it. Our part is admitting our weakness. Our part is saying, God, you call me to a standard that I cannot meet. And all my efforts to try to be good enough are going to fall short. And God, I need you to change me. I don't need you to just give me the ability to do better keeping the rules. I need you to change my heart so that you make me that kind of person. And that's why Jesus Christ died on the cross, to take the penalty for the sin that we deserved and to give us his righteousness. And then as he changes our heart, what happens is he gives us the ability to pursue righteousness. And the more we pursue righteousness, the more that it becomes natural for us to defeat the sin that we once struggled with so much. So that's the idea. So now we're going to come back to that in a minute. But when we looked at that, you say, okay, even after we understand that, you know what, as Christians, for those of us who have a relationship with Christ, it's still God begins to change us, but some of these things are still hard to actually live out. And the whole of the Christian life is now taking these principles that God teaches us and say, how do I take it and how do I learn to live it out in these relationships? So let's take the golden rule. How do we take the general principle, the golden rule, and how do we learn to live it out in specific relationships? And you know what? None of us are there yet. None of us have arrived, because all of us are in process of being transformed if we let God do his work in us. Now here's the challenge of the golden rule. Is that one of the dangers that we can have in the golden rule is that we often affirm it as a general principle. We affirm it should apply to all our relationships. So what does God call us? He calls us with everyone to do good to them as we would seek that the good that we would want them to do to us. But then because we affirm everyone, we never think of it specifically to individual relationships. And because we never do that, what often can happen is that we affirm that in theory it should apply to everyone, but in practice it often applies to no one. So what I want to do this morning is that I want to take a few minutes and you know, point out, maybe step on some toes, in some areas that, what are some areas that we need to apply this? Now, clearly it applies toward friendships. Clearly it applies in general. So that when I look at this, it's not taking anything out. But let me point out some more specific areas that we sometimes don't give the attention that we need to. So what does it look like to apply the golden rule? I'm going to give you four areas. Number one, in our judgments of other people. Now, you might be surprised by that, and the reason that I'm bringing out this specifically is that Jesus himself brings it out specifically. A couple weeks ago, we were in Matthew chapter 7. And we saw in the beginning of 7, and we saw in the first couple of verses that Jesus is teaching about judging. Now let me take you back there. Matthew 7, verse 1. He says this: judge not that you not be judged, for with the judgment that you pronounce, you will be judged, and with the measure used, it will be measured to you. Now what I want you to see, we saw a couple weeks ago, is that when we look at this, Jesus is really taking the golden rule, which he's going to say in a few minutes, and he's saying, okay, let me almost preface that and say, take that principle and apply it to the way that you judge other people. He's saying, basically, I want you to judge other people in the way that you wish that they would judge you. I want you to see and judge other people in all their struggles and all their failures and the times that they disappoint you in the way that they would treat you. In fact, I want you to judge them in the way that you wish that God would judge you, in the way that God does. Now, the question that we have to ask, if we knew that our judgment of other people, the way that we view other people, the way that we interact with them when they struggle or fail in some way, if we knew that that would be the standard that would be applied towards us, would it change the way that we judge them at all? Think about it. How do you want God to judge you? I know how God wants God to judge me. I want God to be very gracious towards me. I want him to take everything into consideration, all the things that I'm struggling with and all the things that I've, you know, my past. And I want him to be patient. And when I mess up, I want him to say, you know what, Mike, I know you messed up in this so many times, but you know what? I'm going to be gracious. I'm going to be patient. Man, I'm thankful that God is so much, you know, so much more patient with me than I am with other people. And I long for that. I'm thankful for that because I know I need it. You know, when it comes to my relationship with God, I don't want fairness. I mean, that was one of the ultimate arguments that I had with my kids. You know, that sometimes you have an argument that you just win it in an instant. I was having a discussion, and they were saying, that's not fair. And they turned around and they said, okay, I'm going to manipulate Dad. And says, that's not fair. God is fair. You need to be fair like God. And I turned around and I said, oh, do you think God's fair? Do you really want God to be fair? Do you want to give God to give you everything you deserve? And she has never called to me about being fair again. You know, the fact is God's not fair. If God were fair, I mean, I'd be in hell right now. But God isn't. He's gracious and he's patient. And I'm thankful for that. But how about other people? You know what? When I do something and other people, I want them to be more like God. I want them to be patient. I want them to be gracious. I want them to be understanding. And if something happens and it's unquestioned, it's unsure what my motive was or what I intended, I hope that they give me the benefit of the doubt. I hope that if it could have been this or this, that they assume the positive until the negative's proven otherwise. I long for people to treat me that way. You know what? That's how I want to be judged. Now, the question is, that if I know how I want to be judged, am I judging other people that way? Am I treating them with the same kind of patience and grace and love as that God treats me? Am I treating them with the same benefit of the doubt that I hope that they will give to me? And what Jesus is saying here is when we look at this, that's the standard we should. Now, it doesn't mean that we ignore sin. It doesn't mean that we, you know, don't call sin what it is. It doesn't mean that we stop discerning between right or wrong. What it does mean is that when people do sin, that we call it what it is, but we're gracious in that. And we're understanding and we're patient. And we realize that all of us are stumbling along the way and that we're all learning. And even as God is so patient with me, so I'm called to be that patient with other people. So how do you want to be judged? And God calls us to now take the golden rule and apply it towards our interactions with other people. That's one. Second issue, I think that we don't often do this, is God calls us to say, how do we live out the golden rule in our work relationships and our financial dealings? Now, one of the things that you look at this is when you look at work relationships, here's why I think the challenge is when we think of work relationships, we often think of competition. You know, we think of win-lose. So even in our workplace, you know, we're sitting there and we're working and we want to be noticed and we want the credit for this. And you know what, I'm trying to make sure that I get the credit. And there's a win-lose environment there. And then if we're in business, if we're selling something, well, I want to get the most I can for what I'm selling. And if I'm buying, you know what, I want to get the lowest price. And there's a competition. And what you have, especially in the American economy and the whole idea and the emphasis on capitalism, that there's often this competitive thing that to say, okay, well, you do the best you can. You get the best deal you can. You take, if you can, you bend the rules as far as you can. And you know, how do we live out the golden rule if we're a believer? Because I believe that God calls us to apply the principles of this life because it's now about life change, it's character change. If my character has changed, then I should live it out. I should understand that God calls me to live out the golden rule at the workplace. He calls me to live it out if I'm making sales, if I'm making a financial transaction. And you know what it means? It means that as Christians, we can go out there and we can interact, and I can give credit to the other person and trust that, you know what? God's going to raise me up. I don't need to compete. I need to be able to do as best as I can, and I can build other people up and realize, you know, God's going to take care of me if I follow him. And financially, you know what? We can sit there and we can try to make a sale, and you know what? If we do what's right and if we're fair, truth and time are going to go hand in hand, and the credibility of being fair is going to be something that God is going to bless over time. And this is something that I relate to in a very practical way. My dad is in started a business, you know, 55 years ago in financial services financial counseling and life insurance. And that's a very competitive area. And it's usually an area where you're trying to sell what you could get the biggest commission on. And he wasn't a Christian at the time, but the person that recruited him into that industry at first was. He's a very strong believer, and he was known for emphasizing the golden rule. And he would tell people that he would sell, you know, when you make a sale, do to others what you'd have to them. You'd look at that and say, is this what you would want to sell your mom? And he emphasized that so much so that when that company grew and they built that office building, it was known as the Golden Rule Building because he was so well known for that. And my dad, as an unbeliever, tried to build his business on those principles. Once he became a believer, it became more real to him. You know, what I love is that now it's, you know, 55 years later, my brother is now in charge of that company. And about 5 years ago, they were celebrating 50 years as a company, and he looked back and he remembered the importance. He said, maybe we've lost that. And so he got all the people together that work with the company, and he really spent a lot of time talking about this history and the importance of the golden rule. And he went out and he had marbles made, and these little marbles. It's got the golden rule written about it, and he gave it to everybody that represents the company, and they still do, everybody that comes in new. And he says, here's what I want you to do. I want you to take this marble, and when you go out to business, keep it in your pocket. And when you're talking to that person, feel it, and remember, are you doing this due to the others as you would have them do unto you? Is this what you would want to sell your mom? Is this a product you would want someone to sell you? And you might make more commission doing something else, but you know what? You're not out there to make the biggest commission. You're out there to be able to represent truth and integrity. And if you do that, God in the long run is going to take care of you. Boy, what a great example that, you know, to see a dad and a brother who live out in an industry that are known for being kind of cutthroat and say, you know what, we don't have to compromise our faith. And God's going to bless us if we don't. And so each one of us have to ask, okay, how do I apply the golden rule at work? Third question, how do I apply it towards my relationships with my enemies? Now, you might look at that and say, wait a second, that didn't talk about enemies there. Well, okay, let me take you to Luke chapter 6. Luke chapter 6, you have Jesus teaching a lot of people say it's another version of the Sermon on the Mount. It's him, one of the longest statements of his teaching. A lot of the things that are in the Sermon on the Mount are there in Luke 6. Now, let me take you in Luke 6 where he takes the golden rule and show you what is right around it, right? Okay, Luke chapter 6, starting in verse 27. But I say to you who hear, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who abuse you. And to the one who strikes your cheek, offer the other also. And from the one who takes your cloak, do not withhold your tunic either. Give to everyone who begs from you, and from the one who takes away goods, do not demand them back. And then we come to verse 31. And as you wish that others would do to you, do so to them. It's right there, and the context is saying, when you take the golden rule, he says, in this context, I want you to specifically look at not only your friends, but how about your enemies? The weight of this becomes now treat your enemies as the way that you would want your friends to treat you. Man, that's hard. You know, it's his point is this, that when you understand real love, because again, it's not just what we do, it's who we are. It's about God transforming our character. And when we see it, what we realize that he says, I want you to have a transformed character that is really loving, that is really kind. And you want to know if you really have a transformed character? Well, let's go and see how you act towards those that are your enemies, those who do you wrongly. Let's see that. Let that be the evaluation. Look what he continues to say in the verses right after this. If you love those who love you, what benefit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who love you, do good to you, what benefit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. And if you lend to those to whom you expect to be received, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners to get back the same amount. But love your enemies, do good and lend, expecting nothing in return, and your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High. You know what he's saying? He's saying an incredible thing here. That when we look at the culture, you know what, even in the general culture, when he says sinners, it's people that the culture would see as sinners. It's in quotes. You know, you say, you think of people that are the worst of the culture. And you know what? They take care of their family. They take care of their friends. You know, they're kind to people that are, you know, that are kind to them. And if you sit there and you evaluate our love and our character by how we treat those who are kind to us and our family and friends, then how are we different from non-Christians? How are we different even from, you know, gangs? And how are we different from people that we would condemn because of their hostility towards others? No, what sets us apart as a follower of Christ is that God changes us so that we not only do good to those who do good to us, but that we have the ability to do good and to love and to be kind towards those who are not kind to us. That we again treat our enemies like we would want our friends to treat us. See, that shows a totally different kind of transformation. That's a totally different kind of character. And that's hard, isn't it? But you see that when you understand it this way, this isn't a rule to keep. You can't keep this rule. The only way to do it is to let God transform your heart. One more. These are getting harder as they go, right? What's harder than that? Okay, how do you show the golden rule to your spouse? They sit there, wait a second, how's that harder than your enemies? You know, that's my enemy. In practice, it often is. You know, we look at that and say, well, how do we show love towards us that we feel like aren't loving us back? And you know what? Oftentimes, that's our struggle in marriage. You know why we struggle? It's because I feel like I've done something and you've not done something back. It's 50-50 and I've been in 60% and you're pulling back. And so, you know, why should I keep trying when you're not paying me back? Why should I keep trying when you're not responding? And you know why we struggle in marriage? That's why. And we wouldn't necessarily call our spouse our enemy, but you know, here's the challenge to say if we really live out the golden rule, do to others as we would have them do unto us. Judge and be patient and kind, and even when they aren't doing back, the question is not whether they are, you know, whether they're doing 50%. Listen, when you think about this, think about your vows when you got married. If you're married, when you made a vow, you vowed to love, honor, and cherish until God separates you by death. There was no if, there was no but, there was no condition, there was no as long as. And the fact is that there are times that all of us will go through in marriage that we will say in marriage, you know, I'm sitting there trying and they're not doing back. I don't feel like my needs are being met. Okay, well, the question is, do you really love? Do you have the character that God calls us to do good as we would long for them to do to us, regardless of what they're doing back to us? Can we, the hardest time, the time that you show you're really in love is when you feel like they're not loving you back. Because the fact of the matter is, the most loving things that I do, again, if I expect something back, I'm really not loving my wife. I'm making an investment that I expect a return on. Can I love when I'm not getting a return? Can I love when I feel like she's disappointing me or frustrating me? Can I love as Paul teaches in Ephesians, as Christ loved the church, that he gave himself up for her while the church was rejecting him? Man, that's hard to do. But when we look at this, it's real easy to affirm the concept of the golden rule. Man, it's hard to live out. It's hard to live out in our workplace. It's hard to live out in our judgments of other people. It's hard to live out with our enemies and those that are attacking us. Man, it's hard to live out in our marriage, in our families. But that's what sets us apart, that we are to be radically different people. Not just because we're keeping rules, but because God is changing us. Now, to understand this, if you struggle with it, let's go back to where we said is that you've got to understand it's all about God changing us. And you say, I can't do it. Man, for me, I'm ready to give up on my marriage because she's not meeting my needs. He's not meeting my needs. You don't know how difficult they are. Boy, how can I love that enemy? How do I live this out in the workplace? Man, that's hard. I don't have what it takes. Well, here's what I want to encourage you to come back to. To express Christ's love, we must first submit to his grace. Because if you sit there and you say, if you think it as a rule, as morality, if you see this as a rule that you have to keep, as a great moral teaching, what I'm going to tell you is that it will crush you. It will be a crushing burden that you will fail at. Because you will try and try, and you will not do it, and you'll get discouraged, and it will crush you. Because you know what the fact of the matter is? I can say for myself, I know that I'm not good enough to do that. And I'm pretty sure that none of you are as well. You see, if it's about my attempts, I can't do it. I'm far too selfish. The only way for me to do it is to experience God's grace and to let him change me. Now, I want you to see, keep your Bibles open. If you have your Bibles, go back to Matthew 7, because I want you to see it's right there. Because everything he's telling us, it's not about morality. It's not about a do. It's not about a try. It's about something that God has to do in us. Look at what comes right before it. Verse 7. We looked at this last week. Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks, seeks. For the one who receives, for the one who seeks, finds. The one who knocks, it will be opened. Or which of you, if his son will ask for bread, will give him a stone? If he asks for a fish, will give him a serpent? If you then, who are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good gifts to those who seek him? Now, the very next word, so whatever you wish, literally in the translation, in the original, it's therefore, it's tied immediately to what's before. Now, what is it saying? What it's saying is that, what do we need to pray for? What is it that we need God to give us? What is it that we don't have in of ourselves? It's the character to love. This is not something that you try harder at. It's something that we say, God, I don't have it. I need you to give it. God, I'm coming and I'm asking because I know I need it. I'm seeking. How do I do this? You need to find me. God, I'm knocking at the door because it's hard and there are times that I don't have what it takes and I'm gonna knock until my knuckles get bruised because I know if I keep knocking, you will give me what I don't have. You see, but it's not about us doing, it's about us recognizing that Christ needs to do in us. Now, if you miss it, go to the verses right after. We're going to see this more next week, but I want you to see it in this context. Right after this, enter by the narrow gate, verse 12, for the gate is wide and the way is easy that leads to destruction, and those who enter by it are many. But the gate is narrow and the way that is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. Now, he's not talking about the narrow gate of those who keep the law and those who don't. What he's talking about is the narrow gate is those who have a relationship with Jesus Christ to let him change us, and those who are trying to do it on our own. And he said, there are many people that are going to go and that are going to just do their own thing, and many people that are going to try to be moral and try to do it of their own ability, who are going to take the religious approach, and they're going to fail. But there are a few people who understand that it's not about us trying to be good enough. It's not about us trying to keep the rules. The story of Christianity is about God coming and showing grace towards us, the grace that we long for. The fact that he isn't fair. If we were fair, we deserve to go to hell. But because he's not fair, Christ took hell for me when he took his sins, my sins on the cross. And he gives me righteousness. He forgives me and gives me the righteousness. He changes me to be the person that I need to be. And he invites each person here. Have you ever received Christ as your Lord and Savior? He calls us out. I want to show you that grace. And when you look at this call to morality that you can't keep, don't get discouraged. Don't get crushed by it. But recognize that what God is doing is he's saying, I'm calling you to something that you don't have. And if you want to be there, the only way to do it isn't to try harder. It's to accept the grace that I'm offering you through Jesus Christ. Not that you will do this, but let me make you this, that you be it. Have you ever asked Christ in your life? Have you ever accepted his grace and forgiveness? If not, I hope you do so this morning. That you, even after the service, I hope that you'll come up here. There'll be people up here that would love to talk with you and pray with you. And we'd love to just, call us this week. Come back tonight. And if we understand that, I want you to understand, how do we do this? You know, how we do it is then as Christians, we recognize that we have received it. And when I don't know how to love that other person, what do I need to do? I need to remember how I was loved. When I don't know how to show grace toward that other person, I need to remember how God shows grace towards me. When I don't have it, I need to remember, God, help me to be overwhelmed by the love that I received. Because the fact of the matter is, this isn't what we experience in real life. The only place we experience it is starting with our relationship with God and then somewhat with other people who understand that. Closing thought, simply this, you can only love others to the degree that we've experienced love. And so if you don't know Christ, you will never be able to live this out. I'm sorry, you will try, but it will crush you. If you know Christ, that's the starting point. And then for us who do, what we need to do is constantly run towards the love of Jesus Christ. Be amazed by how he loves us. And when I don't have what it takes, I need to come to him and I need to be reminded of how much he's loved me. And realize that will give me the power and the ability to love others as well. That's what will change me. Not my behavior, my character, by his grace.
Thanks for watching. If you have any questions about what we talked about, Jesus Christ or church, feel free to reach out to us on Facebook, Instagram, or by email. The links are in the description.